Okay, okay, we're listening. Radio. Everybody, we had a great show 2 weeks ago where we talked about the effects of growing up without a father. It was so good that we decided to do a part two of it. So Zara was gracious enough to come back to conclude her story. So we're going to allow her to go back and revisit the things that happened within her life and also how she is today. The crew is back with us, so we're going to allow Zara to go through her story. Zara, are you there?
I'm here.
All right,
hello,
go ahead,
everybody.
Hey.
Yeah, so how you doing, Odetta?
Hey, good evening. How are you, love?
Good. I'm good. And Greg?
What up, what up?
And Amadi, I know that you're there. But
hey, how you doing? How's everybody? Okay, okay, we're listening.
Okay. So where we left off was, so at 27, because I was doing a timeline. So at this time, I was about 27, and now I was in a situation. I was divorced. I had three small children. I had no job. I was homeless, no car. All the money was gone. Didn't have any money. I was living in the shelter. And at this moment, I felt no love from anyone. And it was all because I felt at that time, all because I was a fatherless child. I was a fatherless child, and I was angry at my mother for not being the mother that I felt that I needed her to be or she should have been to me and my siblings. Between the ages of 27 and 30, I lived life the same way I had been living it at 15, I guess, from the age of 12 to 27 to 30. Every man that I picked after my divorce was either married or coming out of a marriage. They were 15, 20 years older than I was. They were well established because I was used to that. I dated a scientist. I dated a guy who owned his own company and that accepted me with three kids because I was real good at figuring out what a man wanted and what he needed and playing a role so I can get what I need for my children and for myself. It wasn't until the age of 30, because this is what I really want to focus on as well. The age of 30 was a turning point for me. I mentioned last time before, my mom had died by that time. I never had really dealt with my dad about the effects that happened until I turned 30 was when I decided I needed some help. And I remember, like, just in a park one day saying, you know, God, if you're real, I need help. Like, I'm tired of living this. I don't know what to do anymore. And I met this lady, and her name was Aset, and she had came to Atlanta because she was a hurricane victim. But she was also, she was a therapist, and she was in a park with her granddaughter, and she saw me in the park with, I was a nanny at the time, with these kids. I was working part-time, taking care of some other people's kids as a nanny, and she saw me in the park, and she came to me and just started talking to me and asking me where I was from, and she saw that I was taking real good care of the kids. But to get into that story, she invited me over to her house because I kind of talked to her and told her I was divorced and I was in a shelter and all this stuff, and I had three small children. So when she invited me to her house, she gave me some alkaline water. That was my first time ever hearing that. And she told me to, like, take my shoes off and to just lay down. We talked, and she fed me some greens, some, like, vegetables or salad and stuff that she made. And she told me to lay down. She had a meditation area. And she I lay down in this meditation area, and she just told me to just lay there and keep my mind still. I remember that. And then I laid there for like 15 minutes, and my mind could not stop racing. And we did this for like 30 minutes. I went home, and she asked me, could I come back every week? And before I knew it, she started talking. She had me meditating, talking to me about my past issues. She made me aware of, like, the things that I was doing from the time that I was 12 to the time that I was 30, and I was looking for change, and I wanted different results, but I was doing the same thing. And I guess that's the first time I heard someone say what insanity was. You know, she told me that I was insane because I kept doing the same thing from childhood to adult, and I'm looking for different results. And the thing that I hated so much about my mother and my father, I turned it right into that person. I became the person that I hated. And she taught me, in order to deal with that, I needed to go back. I needed to go back to my dad and to my mom. And obviously, I couldn't go back to my mom because she's already dead. But to write to her, to start writing to my mom and start letting her know how I felt and go and talk to my dad and let him know that, look, this is not an attack. This is what I feel. And then after she dealt with me with that, she told me, one key thing she told me is stop lying to yourself. Let's face what you're dealing with. Let's face who you are. Let's face this inner person. So I found out that I was this little girl that was looking for someone to love me. And how I found how I related to love was what a man could do for me, and through sex. That's how I related to a man loving me. So so from the time that I was a little girl to the time that I became this adult, I used men for those things, for love that I was seeking, and for financial stability. So she made me deal with myself. She also made me figure out, like, who am I? And I couldn't find out who I was until I dealt with my mom and my dad. And after that, I started to deal with that inner child. And she told me to name her. So I picked a name for her. And my family used to call me Baby Glow, right? Growing up, everybody called me Baby Glow. Everybody called me that. They say I was a light when I walked into the room. I made everybody smile, happy, and I was very opinionated. And that was my name. But I decided to name her Baby Ho because that's who she is. So Baby Ho is this person that's very controlling, that identifies men as just a tool, that don't care about true love and intimacy. She's a survivor. So it's good things about her, but it's also bad things about her.
Hold on. I know we didn't say questions, but you got me with this Baby whole thing. So basically at the age of 12, you already knew all this stuff, or is it before this particular time you knew how you could manipulate men to get what you wanted because you didn't have a father figure in your life?
Well, it started at 12. I started to do it, and I saw how easy it was. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it just went out throughout my adulthood. Like, in my situation, there was no way that I was supposed to be 30 years old dating a scientist. You know, like, there's no way. I should have been dating him because I was living in a shelter. I had three children. Like, he shouldn't have been taking care of me, dating me, like, you know, wanting to be with me. You know, I knew that it wasn't going to ever go anywhere, you know, like, but he was stuck to the idea of it. Cause so I was so good at that age. I knew exactly how to make people feel, and I was very manipulating. And that's what she made me deal with. So it was a lot that I had to deal with, you know, to rediscover myself. Like, at the age of 30, I had to learn who I really was, you know, what I like, what love is, how to how to deal with the men without trying to manipulate the situation or control the situation. Mm-hmm. I had to learn with humility, meekness, like all the stuff that I didn't have in me as an adult. I had to learn, and better yet, I had to learn how to be a mother to my children. So I had to forgive myself for what happened to me, explain to my children that I was doing the same thing to them that my mom did to me, and I had to rebuild relationships. I didn't realize how affected my kids were, like how I didn't know my children. Once I got to know myself, I realized I didn't even know my children at all. I was existing, doing the same thing to them. I was just taking care of them. I was feeding them. And until I got to that point, I wasn't able to forgive myself, forgive my past, forgive all the older men who took advantage of my body. Like, all that stuff. And I finally got to a point after she dealt with me for like three to four years consistently, like twice a week consistently for 3 or 4 years straight. I wasn't able to fully deal with myself until I got to the point where I learned who I was, how to keep baby hoe in subjection. How, because she's a part of me for so long that she's still there, how to love my children like a mother's supposed to, how to forgive my past, how to even get into a healthy relationship with the man.
Mm-hmm.
And at 33, I was turning 34, actually. I was 33, turning 34 was when I was actually ready. And then I met the man that I'm with today. And one thing that Aset always said to me is that this book that I'm writing is nothing to be ashamed of. Like, my life, this book, that's what she called it, is not anything to be ashamed of. State the facts. Be real. Be honest to what it is, what has happened to you, and that's what it is. I put it in the book, and guess what? I decided to change the storyline. I decided to change the chapters. And she always say, you know, you are what you think. Once we change your mindset, we can change the story to however you want to write it. And now it's beautiful. Like, it's a beautiful story because I have repaired the relationship with my children. My dad died 2 years ago, and we repaired the relationship together between the two of us. I've married again. I had 2 children that was planned, and that was not because I felt like it's something I had to do or it just happened. I've remarried. I'm in a relationship that is built upon truth. You know, it may not always feel good. The truth doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good for my husband to know my past. But one of the things that told me was when I come into a real relationship, it's so important for that person to know my truth. To know my story, because else they can't deal with me. So, yes, it's hard. It's hard, and even for my children. I mean, they know a lot. Of course, I got a 15-year-old daughter, so she knows as much as she needs to know at 15. As she gets older, she's going to know more and more about me. You know, but she can't handle all of this now. But my 20-year-old knows. He knows. And so he knows how to deal with me. Oh, yeah, he knows. Okay. My 16-year-old know more than my daughter knows. My middle child knows, because that's the only way that we can break as a people, break this cycle of abuse, of neglect, of whoredom, of like, because if we don't expose it, then we just
secrets.
Keep it hidden.
Right.
Exactly.
No more
so
secrets.
We expose it. Exactly.
Talk about
it's funny. It's funny because my husband and I were just having a conversation, and I was just telling him that I felt like it was something that I wanted. I wanted to get a new vehicle, and it is so difficult for me to discuss with a man what I want, what I feel is best for me. And we need to have to discuss that, and we have to make a decision of what's best for the family, and I'm not used to doing that. Remember, I'm used to manipulating to get what I want out of any situation, so it's so hard. So I was angry, and I started to feel like he was attacking me. I started to feel as if, I mean, I started attacking him, sorry. I started to feel as if he was, like, not on my side, not giving me what I feel like I wanted and I needed. And he has to say, Zara, because he calls me, he has to say, Zara, listen, I am not your enemy. We are on the same team here. I want what you want. I want to give you the things that you desire, but I also, we also need to give the family what the family needs. You are not alone. You're not doing this by yourself. You don't have to figure this out anymore. See, the only way he can even say that to me is because he has to know my past.
Right. Yes, I understand you.
And it made me calm down. It made me not spaz. Mm-hmm. It made me, and sometimes I have to be like, look, you're neglecting me. You're pushing me. Because how I related to a relationship and love is through sex with other men. So sometimes I have to be real with him and say, look, you pushing me. You hear me? And he knows the key words, like, all right, you know, let me handle that. Let me tell her she's beautiful. Let me hold her. Let me show her intimacy, you know, because I'm neglecting her. You know, it sounds like a dude talking to a female, but that's how I had to live my life. So the bottom line is that what it said did for me, it was like she was my angel because she was in my life for those years, and then she disappeared. I never heard from her ever again.
Wow.
I lost contact with her. She disappeared, and she wasn't there. But what she did for me was she helped me be able to help so many other people. I mean, since then, I've taught classes helping women that's been in abusive relationships, that's been abandoned, that mothers that are single with children don't know how they're going to make it, how to help them gather their thoughts and their minds and change their mindset from negative to positive. So I'm so thankful that Aset, this therapist, this angel came into my life to help me because now I'm a work in progress. Like, I have my moments. I have my triggers. That's why everybody in my house know my triggers. Everybody in the house know when something triggers me to be able to help me come back to reality because I'm still a work in progress because I spent all of my life living this way. And I'm only spending 4 or 5 years of my life changing, you know, and it's gonna take time, and I need help. So now that Aset is not there, my children, my husband, my friends, because even my friends know, my girlfriends know. That's a hard pill to swallow. My close friends know, so they know when I'm off. Like, all right, everybody gotta get together, go run with Zara, go exercise with Zara. Go talk to Zara because she's off, you know.
Right.
And so, you know, and I guess that's where I am now. So that's not the end because I'm still a work in progress.
It's a heck of a story.
If
you
have any questions for me, yeah.
Well, we definitely got questions for you. I got a whole lot of questions. Before we get to our questions, I just want to let you know that within this show and also for the month of September, we'll be giving out a Amazon gift card, $50, for the person that counts how many times we say the keyword. And our keyword for the month of September is father. And this is being brought to us by Freddie Chapman. He is a real estate agent in the Atlanta area. So if you need any help buying or selling a house in the Atlanta area, check out BHGRE, Metro Brokers, Freddie Chapman. His phone number is 404-843-2500. Once again, this is the key word for the month is father. So if you hear us say it and count how many times we say it throughout the show and also all the shows in the month of September, and you'll get the prize in our Facebook group. If you're not part of it, join us at OK OK We're Listening on Facebook. Odette, do you have any questions?
I do.
Go ahead, please.
Well, firstly, I just want to let you know that I enjoyed part two more so than part one. Hearing about your rebirth and your healing and your reprogramming is just amazing.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that you came out, like you're coming out of that, and that you also understand that it's like an active thing. It's not like just you're healed and it's over. It's something that you have to actively participate in.
Mm-hmm.
So my question for tonight is, where did I lost it?
Don't lose it, Odetta. Get it back. Get it back.
I'm sorry.
Well, okay. It's okay.
All
right.
So you dealt with.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. You had your friend that came into your life and served the purpose of bringing you out of and pushing you towards healing. Have you sought any other therapy outside of that? After that?
Yeah.
Yes.
She was a professional. No. She was a professional therapist. So I mainly used her because she was able to relate to me. So that helps to have somebody to be able to relate with you. I've been to a counseling group called Families First, and that's a really good one because it doesn't matter how much money you have. Most people think that they can't get therapy because they can't afford it. Families First, you can have zero income, and you can get it for $5 a month. You know, it goes by your income that you make, and they won't refuse anybody. I went through them. I took counseling sessions for my children as well because they were affected by it. My children saw a lot of different things. There's a lot of different men come in and out. Not that many. I mean, five is too many. You know, they should have seen.
Like
but you know, that's too many. You know,
yeah.
So kids want to know, like, yo, what's going on?
Who that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you can't have too many uncles, huh?
No.
Exactly. They have to deal with that. So, you know, I did counseling sessions for me and my children, family counseling sessions. That's how I was able to deal with some of the things, you know? Yeah, a lot of the stuff. Okay. So counseling, definitely. Not talking to your girlfriend. Or your brother, someone that's completely neutral, that professionally that get paid for it. I think I mentioned it before. When you know, like you go to a doctor for a physical, you need somebody to work on
mental health.
Your mental. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Zara, I have a question for you. Someone from our Facebook group asked this question. It's not necessarily towards you, but it's towards your brothers. How did this affect their lives when your father left out?
I had two brothers.
Mm-hmm.
My younger brother, it still affects him. He was angry with my dad until the day that he died. And he held that against him because he was the baby boy, the second to last child. And it's hard for him. Like, what my dad did so much that he's repeating the same pattern. And if you tell him that, he would be really, really angry. So, in his mind, he thinks that he's a better father because he has two children. He's with his kids every day.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not mentally there. He's physically there, but he's not mentally there. He's dealing with different women just like my dad. You know, it's the same cycle. It's the same cycle. My sisters and it's nine of us total. So half, some of us talk, some of us don't talk. Some people still angry. Some people feel like, you know, my dad had his favorite. Like, so it messes up the family completely. You know, and I realize that I have to heal from within. So I can't blame my sisters or my brothers. The one thing that I am thankful for is that even at the age of 13, I was strong enough to get my family up out of Louisiana. I posted a picture of all the kids that came after. So it's nine children total, but then there's like so many nieces and nephews, and all of them came after because I to get them up out of that place And I have nieces that's in college. One that just went to, she's in LSU,
nice.
Staying in the honor dorm. I have another niece that's in Full Sail. My nephews are working and going to school, and, you know, and that makes me feel good. So I have to, I'm kind of running on, but the negative stuff that happened, yes, is still there, but I have to look at the positive that came out of it as well, you know, and there's so much positive out of that came out of it, you know, that I don't think that as a family we would have made it in Louisiana still living how we were living.
I have another,
yeah.
Not necessarily a question, but I was looking up some statistics about things, and I wonder, put this in our Facebook group as well, but there's this article I read from the Huffington Post. It says 12 confronting child sexual abuse statistics all parents need to know. One of the things that brought up to me that was kind of shocking, and I think that you're trying to talk about this a little bit, is the 12th one. It says children living without either parent, foster children, are 10 times more likely to be sexually abused than children who live with both biological parents. Children who live with a single parent that has a living partner are higher at risk. They are 20 times more likely to be victims of sexual abuse than children living with both biological parents. So I know this doesn't really pertain to what you were saying, but you was talking about how your father left and you was looking for that guidance, and you need to have that guidance. So you automatically just started assuming that if I have sex with this man or have sex with this man or have this guy of power come into my life, then he can bring me out of that actual place. And a lot of children feel that way once they lose their guidance from their parents. Do you want to speak on that?
Yeah, I can speak on it from the parent perspective. Like, what happens is when there's a separation in the household, it's tragic. So it's like a death, even to the parents, like going through divorce or separation, because I learned that. I was so angry at my dad and my mom for not dealing with each other, because I kind of felt like y'all still have children. Like, y'all need to learn how to deal with each other. So I was so angry with them. And when I got divorced, I realized that it was a death. And the parents, the two adults, they try to figure things out the best way that they know how, and for the children. So thinking about when I was a teenager, I was thinking, well, they're adults and they're not going to figure it out. I need to grow up so I can figure it out. So what I looked at was there was other adult men that had more than what I had, that had what I wanted to, you know, what I needed as far as money, cars, whatever. So I didn't look at them as if I was being raped or abused or whatever. Like, sometimes I have to be reminded, like, I was taken advantage of. Because
you were.
I was
right,
a child.
Right, you were. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So for me, as a child, I was thinking, okay, well, they're not here. They can't figure it out. So I'm going to do what I need to do to figure it out for myself or for my siblings. And that's what happened to most children. That's how we get abused.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? And then you were talking about inside of the home. Inside of the home, you know, when as a teenager, and I can't really talk about it too much because my mom never brought another man home. Like, she was waiting for my dad, you know. But the little that I can say is talking when I dealt, you know, did classes and talked to other teenagers or parents, that a lot of times, you know, they want to connect with something and feel love, you know. And a lot of times, if the man inside the home is not truly, you know, to that woman, or you don't know the man's background, like, nobody's truly honest, who knows? Because I have a teenage daughter that's 15, and she has a really, really nice body, the body that I had when I was 13, 14, 15. So me knowing that.
Yeah, sometimes I look at her, I'm like, man, she looked just like you.
Exactly.
I'm like, yo, is that Zara? No. I'm like, wow. Yeah, you're right.
I have to have that talk with her. I have to have that talk with my husband. Like, I had to have talk with my husband, like, because I needed to know, you know. And guess what? I couldn't marry a man that was so much older than me anymore. You know what I mean? I couldn't marry a man who looked at me, who was 20, because they were like 15, 20 years older than me. I couldn't be with them because if they looked at me that way, being young, they could look at my daughter that way.
Hold on, Zara. A lot of, and I'm sorry to say this, but a lot of the Jamaican men, they do that. They go in, they get these older women, or get these women that probably in their 40s, they probably in their 50s. They look at them like, they look nice, but they looking at their teenage daughters and going after them.
Oh,
that's right.
I get what you're saying.
That's right.
Yeah, definitely.
That's right. And that's exactly what happens. That's exactly what happens. You know, marrying my husband, a big part of marrying him was the fact that he was at the house one day. My teenage son, friends came to the house with some girls, and he says, "You need to send them girls home because they're not dressed properly over here."
Mm.
That's right. That's right.
Mm. And I was like, "Wow, that's deep for me," you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he was
as
going
a man should.
He's like, "I'm not coming out the room. They don't need to be in my house dressed like this."
No way.
And we
that's
would
right.
send them home.
Yeah, I understand that completely.
Heck yeah!
I'm with no confusions. Yeah, you're right.
Right.
None. So, you know, that's what I realized. Like, that was a part of my healing, too. I had to be with somebody that was not on my level because I felt like my level that I'm on, I need to be with a 55-year-old. But I had to, on the level that Zara is on, the new me, not the other person. You know,
right.
I had to be with somebody that was on that level, someone that I can grow with. And another thing that I didn't really talk about that I want to touch more on is that, you know, the first thing that I had to do is find out who I was, learn to love myself, find out what I like and what I love. So one of the reasons why I became a poker player, because I realized that I love poker. I was playing it as a hobby. I realized I loved it. And I loved it so much that I could make money off it and do it as a profession. So now, instead, I was doing things that I had to do before. Now I did something that I love to do.
You found your passion.
And I'm great at it. Exactly.
Right.
So I found, you know, and then also I learned to learn how to provide for myself, not to depend on a man to provide for me. Because a lot of that's why a lot of kids get abused and a lot of just, you know, single mothers get with guys that's dysfunctional or you don't even have certain conversations because you just want it to work is because we are in need of something.
Right.
You know, stabilization, financial, whatever. So I had to learn how to do that for myself. As strong as I thought I lived my life dependent on a man, somebody to take care of me, looking for that daddy.
And we're
not
advocating that if you want to break up with your spouse or anything like that, you shouldn't break up with them. We're just saying just be responsible and also remember that your children are involved in that breakup as well.
Oh, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Most definitely, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And that the children shouldn't be breaking up. That's what, like, with your husband. It shouldn't be a breakup for your children.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm glad you said that because my divorce, my children is a product of divorce. I had to learn, and a part of my healing, I had to learn that my children didn't lose their father. They didn't lose their mother.
Mm-hmm.
What they did was their dad got remarried, their mother got remarried. They gained two fathers, two mothers, and we all four of us, we come together and we co-parent these children. So when my daughter had a situation and she couldn't talk to me, she talked to her other mom. Her other mom called me and said, "This is what Jaya said to me and we need to handle this together." And that's what we did. And the same thing that happens when it comes to my ex-husband and my husband, they laugh together, they talk together, they both will jack these boys up together. They have to because the children shouldn't lose parents. Better yet, they should gain even more.
Right.
But society teaches us different, and that's why. We should be able to catch it on either end. When the children are something we miss, when they go to their dad and his wife, they should be able to catch it and bring it to us.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that was a part of my healing, too. I stopped blaming him. He stopped blaming me. We had to own up to our irresponsibility in our
childish ways.
Divorce. Exactly.
Right.
Or whatever. I had to own
right.
up to who I was. And he
right.
had to own up to it, and we had to make a decision to be different.
Right.
And
right.
that's what
and
we
that,
did, and it's beautiful.
That's an interesting concept, because like when my parents got divorced when I was a little kid, I was very fortunate that I lived on a street that had so many families that took me in. And my mom didn't really date anybody, but I just had all these different people, all these different men, all these different women that was able and willing to help raise me to become a man. And if I didn't have that, it would have been a totally different story. I might have been in jail, could have been killed, whatever.
Yes.
There's been a lot of crazy stuff. So I understand
yes.
exactly what you mean. You grow with the community. You have to grow with the community. And fortunate for you, you know, you have, you know, a husband and you have the ex-wife. I mean, ex-husband and the ex and his wife, they come together and they're dealing with your children as such, not like, oh, that's your other people's children. I don't have to deal with them. My children is over here. I deal with them.
That's right.
Everybody come together and raise the children. That's beautiful. I love that.
And I want to speak on something because one of the questions, there was a question that said, you know, what should we ask the guests? And one of the things was, like, wasn't the mom responsible? And one of the comments was that, yeah, the mom was the pimp in this situation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I felt that way. I blamed my mom. I blamed my dad because they were the adults responsible. But in my process of getting therapy, what I found when we did a family history, that on my mother's side, it was a long history of bipolar and schizophrenic. My mom never told me that. I never knew it until we did the family history, and I was like, oh, that's why my aunt act this way. Oh, that's why my mom act that way. Nobody would never call it. It was like taboo for calling it what it was, mental, that my family had mental health disorders. So if I didn't get the help that I needed, like, I'm not too far from off that myself. But now that I'm aware, I'm able to deal with it. So here's the thing. Like I said in a comment, how I feel is that when the family, when the community, the husband and the wife breaks up, separate, breaks apart, and because people lose their mind mentally, it's devastating when you have a husband and a wife and they divorce, separate. It's devastating for everybody. I don't care if the husband is like, oh, I wanted it, or the wife is like, I wanted it. It's still devastating. But when you got aunts and uncles and friends and best friends and everybody is around, I feel that it is their job to pitch in. So Uncle
Absolutely.
Greg is your job to pitch in. Aunt
Absolutely.
Odetta is your job to pitch in because you see that this family unit is going down. It's not your job to just sit around and talk about it. Oh, you saw what happened to Zara and her family? You saw, oh, they're going down. They used to be the best family. Now, da-da-da, woo. If you see us hungry and my dad ain't bringing no food, bring some food over. And
help
that's
feed
the thing
us.
That you were talking about. You know what I mean? So once I got older, I realized, that's who I'm angry at. I went to my aunt and my uncle and said, you should have been there. You were supposed to be there. You were making good money. You were supposed to help. You were supposed to step in. So who do I blame? Do I blame my mama who became bipolar and mentally disabled and her brain couldn't function as not even an 18-year-old anymore? You know what I mean?
So
that
brings up an interesting thing. That brings an interesting thing. So basically you have a situation with a parent that has mental issues and nobody in the family stepping up. You know, like you said, who do you actually blame that? Because now you have these children here and they're watching, they seeing, this is what they think their life is supposed to be. Like you said, until you found this therapist, you'd probably be on the same path, the same destructive path, and it'd been a cycle that you pass on to your children. So
exactly,
right, as a community, we need to step in. We need to step in. You're right. And that's what this is all about. We're trying to help people understand that it's not somebody else's problem. It's all of our problem. We talk about, you know, especially in the black community, you know, we deprive, we repress, we don't have anything going on for ourselves. What are you doing to step up to actually fill in that gap that have, you know, a lot of these people have, a lot of these families have? You don't want to step into the gap, then why are you complaining? Step into the gap. Fill the void. You know they have a need. Step in. And that's what this show is all about, trying to step in and fill in that gap. You know, Odetta,
so
me and you have been talking about this a lot. Me and Odetta talk about this a lot. We're trying to build up the community. We're trying to face our fears and become more self-reliant in dealing with other people and then other other topics of, you know, this is your issue, this that's your issue, that's all you have to deal with. You know, Odetta Hamadi always posting about things that are politically incorrect and trying to change it. And that's what we are all trying to do. Am I right, Odetta? Did we lose Odetta?
I want to say
I'm here.
Okay, all right. Did you hear?
Yes, she's there. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead, Zara.
I want to say, share something with you guys. My son that's about to be 20 came to me one day. He was crying and he was saying he feel like there's no purpose of living.
Wow.
He don't feel love. He don't feel like he wants to be here because he feels no love. Like nobody wants him. Nobody wants to love him. Nobody's come up to him and say, hey, you good looking, you handsome. And he feels like there's no purpose, like he's not wanted in this world. And
where's,
you know,
his father?
What hit me? His father is there. My husband is there. Mm-hmm. He was talking about a female, a woman. Like that love, that relationship type love.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what hit me? Is that I passed on to my child. My child saw. He saw me. He saw me out there. He saw me equating love with these things. Somebody is there with me, doing for me, what they saying to me. Like, he saw.
That's what he thought love was.
And that's
right.
Exactly. He didn't have a clue that love is loving himself. So he goes to work. My son makes over $800 a week. And he didn't buy anything, no clothes for himself, make himself look good, nothing. So I go to my husband, I have this talk with my husband, I was like, whoa, my son is thinking love is what he saw from me. Like, and I never talked to him. I never knew what was going on with him. So, you know, my husband had to get with him and had to show him, like, what love is. And when he sit down and talk to him about loving yourself, what do you like? What do you want to do? Let's go do what you want to do. He took him for a ride, took him to the mall, took him to a store that was like a designer store for men, and the men in the store dressed him and told him what he looked nice in, and he bought him clothes, and he took him to get a haircut and said, this is how I want
some
you dress
attention.
Every week.
Mm-hmm.
He took him to a bar and said, this is how you talk to females, and he didn't know none of that stuff. Why? Because he equated love with what he saw from me, what love was. That's
right.
Right, but his father wasn't there actively, like, showing him these things and spending time and, or he was just financially,
he's a teenager.
He was there, just for money.
Nobody know this. When your children get 16, 17, 18, what do? They lock up in their room, they get on their video games,
right,
they go with their friends.
It's also something that you do as a child, like, you know, so it's like kind of habit. Like, you're always, you know, there and, you know, showing them things, how it should be and expectations and things like that. Even when you're a teenager,
remember,
running from you, you still,
so
you raise them on that.
Remember what I was saying, like, I was saying that when your parents go through a divorce, that you got these two people, they think that they're a part of their kids' lives, right? But they're really trying to figure out, like, how to deal with their own tragic of divorce. Most parents don't get along. And I was telling you, for years, we didn't get along. You know, for years, like, we're taught, like, okay, you divorced, so you don't like each other no more. So you get with the kids and you deal with the kids. And most times as parents, my ex is guilty and I'm guilty of it too. We provide food, we provide clothes, we provide a roof over the head, we provide
the necessities.
Like, we don't tell our children we love them. You know, my son was like, Mom, when the last time you told me I was handsome? I was like, I tell you you're handsome, boy. She's like, when? I'm like, why do I have to tell you you're handsome? You know you're handsome. You see what I'm saying? No. So imagine most boys, their fathers don't even say, I love you, son. Boy, you know I love you. I feed you.
Mm-hmm.
We're mostly detached. We're mostly detached. Right. We don't do that with our sons.
No. You can speak for yourself. I'm definitely tell my son I love him every day, every chance I get.
Oh, you're back. Hello, sir.
Hi.
I mean, I was just so captivated by the story. I just wanted to let her talk. You know, last time, you know, I there was questions, and I just wanted to really listen to her, get her point across.
Good talk,
so that people
man.
Right. To the point.
See, you tell your son that you love him all the time because you know better. See, that's why you need to do better. That's why you have this show, Okay, We're Listening. You and Greg and Odetta. But not everybody listen, first of all.
We got to get the message out. It's up to us to get the message out. You're right.
Exactly. And, you know, and that was one of those moments like, whoa, we're about to lose my child. I thought he was good. I thought he was okay. I didn't think he had any problems. But remember what I said, mental health issues is in my family.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's another issue. So I have to deal. And all this is from brokenness.
Yeah.
He was raised by a woman. Yeah, you say, where the dad's at? Yeah, the dad come around, he gets them every other weekend, his weekend. Mm-hmm. Not no more, he's grown. But he was getting them.
Right.
But when you get them, you're surviving. You're trying to survive.
No, you're making a valid point. You're making valid points because I know when I was growing up, nobody taught me how to shave. Nobody taught me how to wear a tie. You know, like I said, I was very fortunate that I could go across the street to Amadi's house and I could see his father wearing a tie to go to church. And I could ask him, how do you do that? Or ask him how to shave, how do you do that? I didn't have that in my household. So you're right. You know, if that's not being part of a child upbringing, you know, they could go and be depressed like your son was and wanted or thought about committing suicide. I get that. That makes complete sense.
Yeah. He knows how to make money. I told you he makes over $800 after taxes at 19 years old. He knows how to hustle because that's what he saw his mom do.
Right.
He's hiring? I'm joking.
You know? No, that makes sense.
But it wasn't.
Sense, you know?
It wasn't until we were able to see it. Like, and it's so much. That's why I would say to parents, like, if you don't know where to start, you know, start with your children. Mm-hmm. Just talk to them. Like, be transparent.
That's
talk
it.
To them. Let them know that you're not too above them. Let them know that if they're the right age, that some of the stuff that you went through, so they can open up to you and tell you. And a lot of things you're not going to be ready for.
Nope.
Oh, no.
And then deal with it and get them help. Get yourself help. Like, don't be ashamed. That's, I guess, if I had to say anything, I'll tell people, don't be ashamed of your story, because the story that you have, it may not be your fault. It may be your parents' fault, your fault, whoever fault it is, it's still your story. So don't
you have to change
it because you never know who you can help in the process of you changing your story.
And everyone has one.
I think at this point, honestly, I think at this point for the culture, we should not worry about who to blame because, I mean, there's enough blame to go around from generation to generation of who didn't do what or who did what. I think the important part that we start to understand while we're here, while we have this moment here in time, is that we are here to find solutions and to repair the culture. Important that we talk to each other, that we communicate with each other, especially our body language with each other. We have to start, respect each other. It's very important when we start doing this and lead by example as well. So that's why I don't have a problem walking around, exhibiting these positive traits and so that my son can see and follow in my footsteps.
Yeah, we have a mixed bag. You know, Amadi has... Mm-hmm. a blended family. He has three children, two girls and one son. I have two girls, and Detta has a grown daughter. And we all try to come together and try to build our community based off of our experiences. And what you're telling us right now, Zara, is pretty interesting stuff that you have five children. What you have, how many baby fathers do you have, or how many men that actually helped you build children?
Three.
So you have a juggling act you have to go through to make your children whole, and you're fighting with the demons or the things that you have within your life, and you're trying to change them and making sure your children don't grow back into that same type of fold that you have, and trying to repair yourself and also repair their future so they could be bright, so we can, I guess, repeat the same process that you have over and over and over again. It's pretty interesting.
Exactly. Because it's going to happen. I would say, oh, I'm never going to be like my mom. I'm never going to marry a man like my dad. I'm never going to do this. I'm never going to do that. And that's all I knew. So I was doing the same exact thing.
You're going to repeat it.
Right.
Well, the more we share experiences, though, the more we learn from each other. And it's important, like you said, when you have a voice and you start sharing your experiences with other people, then they can learn from that experience. And, you know, they can pass that on. And whether it's positive or negative, you learn from it and build from it and become better.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
You learn that you're not alone.
But you said something pretty interesting, Zara. You was talking about,
you
know,
were not
don't go
alone.
To your girlfriend. Okay. Don't go to your girlfriend. Don't go to your friends. Don't go to people around your age. You know, seek professional help. A lot of people don't do that.
Yeah.
A lot of people just say, hey, I just got my girlfriend. My girlfriend been through this. I'm listening to my girlfriend. And they don't
taboo.
Know exactly what you have. Yeah.
It's always
Why?
Been taboo in our community. Like, don't talk about it. Get over it. Give it to God. Give it to Jesus. On Sunday, leave it there and keep it pushing.
Hey,
but
we're
it,
not
it,
pushing
it,
forward.
No. It's like a hamster wheel.
Conversations like these.
Yeah.
One that she was asking me about my professional therapist. There's this lady that I'm best friends with now. Her name is Shelly, and she was in one of the groups. And her and I, we are like each other accountability partner. Yeah. And whenever I get ready to like snap, I call her. It's almost like, I guess, the AA with the drug addicts or the alcoholics.
Yes, you got a sponsor, right.
And we call each other, and we deal with each other to help us snap back into reality. And we remind each other of the things, like, look what you're doing. You know, hers is so bad because she went through some of the similar same things that I went through, and worse as a child growing up. She's from Jamaica, and she hers is so bad that she goes and she has chronic seizures from it. Mm. So she's considered disabled, but she still works and everything because she's Jamaican, and you know how Jamaicans do.
What are you trying to say?
But she has seizures.
Yes.
Seizures at least twice a week from it because she never dealt with the trauma that happened to her. Now she has seizures from it. And whenever she gets to the point where she's getting ready to snap, she calls me so I can help calm her down so she won't go into a seizure because she didn't have a seizure while she was driving and no one could find her for days. So this is really serious. My mom, from the trauma she went through, she had a tumor. And tumors are definitely a cause, one of the reasons of, like, mental disorders, because you can have tumors, and constantly, like, trauma that happens can build that much stress and cause tumors. Well, my mom had tumors for so long and didn't know it until she had the aneurysm. So the trauma she went through, she had it for 10 years. She died when she was just 50.
Oh, God.
Never got help. Never seek help. Went to the mental hospital, but they never checked her brain to make sure that she was okay.
Oh, they never do
the
that.
The brain.
No, you'll give us a pill.
Nah, take it from Greg. They're going to check that.
No, they won't check it. Like, I had this issue with me since I was born. And this could have been easily taken care of when I was a child. But I don't want to CAT scans. I don't do anything like that until it actually happens. And I had my stroke and aneurysm.
Exactly.
But, yeah, I get you.
Mm.
Exactly. Wow. But if we're able to see the signs, I have a friend. Her name is Sarai Kim. You might know her, Greg. She had a tumor rupture herself, going through the same thing. And the signs were there where her mind, some people don't have them, but some people have them, where her mind was like she was put in a mental hospital. They said she was having a breakdown. But what happened, she was having a rupture.
Yeah, tumor.
So and nobody's dealing with it, but it comes from not, you know, living life with all of this built up in this stress, all this stuff.
Right.
And we're not feeling like we have help.
So basically what you're telling me is that we need to seek help. We need to find therapists to help us out. We just can't say, okay, like Dennis said, go to God, go to church, and that's automatically going to solve it. Because a lot of these preachers don't even understand mental illness. And so they can't deal with that. So you have to get some professional help with this. That's what I'm taking from. Okay.
You have to, because it affects your life, literally your life, literally.
Mm-hmm. All right, ladies and gents, we have about 5 minutes left. So before we conclude, let's get our final thoughts. I'll allow our guests to go first, and Odetta, Hamadi, and myself, we can close out. So, Zara, please, final thoughts.
My final thoughts, I guess it would be, first, it starts with dealing with the facts of whatever has happened to you. Deal with the facts of it. And once you're able to deal with the facts of what happened, making the decision to change your life by changing your mind, getting the help that you need, and being okay forgiving yourself for your past, because your past don't have to dictate your future. It does not.
Mm-hmm.
Only if you allow
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. Odetta?
Yeah. Basically, all that I've taken from our two-part series is that everyone has a story.
Mm-hmm.
When you're entering relationships, no matter how serious or how not serious it is, take your time to learn people. Know what you're dealing with. Know what you're entering into. And being honest with communication.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that you're not wasting anyone's time, you're not hurting anyone.
Right.
Just communicate and be honest. It doesn't cost anything. It's free.
It is free.
Yeah. It should be used.
Hamadi.
Yeah, so my final thought is just basically that it's important that we share experiences with each other so that we can make things better for the culture and for our children that are coming into the world and the ones that are already here. So with that being said, I mean, I think that's all about covered. Greg, your final thoughts, Greg?
Thank you, sir. Yeah, I agree with each and every one of you. You know, Hamadi, that's a valid point. We have to stop blaming others. We have to stop thinking that our children are not affected by this, because they are. You know, I don't care if you were in a toxic relationship, or you're in a great relationship, or if you've broken up with your significant other. You need to take account of what's going to happen to your child. And if you're not taking that into account, a lot of bad things can happen into the future.
Yeah.
And we, like, even now we say, look at the kids of this generation. They're crazy. They're our children.
Look
we
at where
did
they
something
come from.
That changed that. Yeah, they came from us.
Generation.
We
right. Yeah, so we did that.
We need to take accountability and look yourself in the mirror and say, hey, I need to change. I need to do this. I need to help out. And if we're not doing that, don't complain. Thank you, everybody,
right.
for listening this week. Really appreciate you guys coming in and listening to us. Feel free to comment on our Facebook page. Okay, we're listening. And if you have any questions whatsoever, we try to bring them into the show. We thank you and have a great night.
Good night.
Good night.